A heads up that today's discussion involves the topic of self-harm, mental illness, and death. If that's not something you want to listen to, then I encourage you to take care of yourself, and you can always come back another day. On the topic of respecting the dead,
listen,
I can do segues.
Just, why would you?
That's hurt, though.
Josh insisted last time that we couldn't do segues, so I can do bad ones.
I'm still half asleep, and that took me a second, and then I was like, oh.
Hi, friends.
Hello, puppets.
Howdy, y'all.
And welcome to Muppets, Sex, and Trauma. I'm Sara Azad. I make the Fat Culture Critic videos on YouTube.
I'm Jack Cram, editor/right-hand man for Passion of the Nerd.
And I'm Josh Gosden, and this show hurts me, and I like it.
That's enough.
Is it?
I don't know. But we have a guest today. Mandy, do you want to introduce us and tell us how you fell in love with Farscape?
Yeah, sure. Hi, everyone. I am Mainly Mandy. I have a YouTube channel, just my name, Mainly Mandy, spelled like the state of Maine, because I am cool like that. I also have a podcast called Respect the Dead, the podcast where we don't. And we, every other Monday, we talk about dead people who sucked and we make fun of them because they can't fight back. I have been basically a lifelong Farscape fan. I was just saying to everybody that I've been watching this show since it was on television, back when that was a thing, on the Sci-Fi Channel. I came into it, like I say late, but I also recognize I'm here with a couple people who are completely new to the show. But like I came into it kind of towards the end of season two. I think the very first episode I remember watching fully was A Clockwork Nabari, which might be why it's one of my favorite episodes to this day. And I just remember being like, I have no idea what's going on. Somebody's eyeballs are out of their skull. I need to know what's happening here. And it just worked out that I think they went on a slight pause around that time before the end of the season. And you could watch all the episodes leading up to that point. So I watched them all, and I completely fell in love with the show. And I've been kind of obsessed with it ever since.
Yeah, well worth being obsessed over. I got into it when they first came out on DVDs.
Oh yeah,
and it was just, oh god, how is something this good, mm-hmm. and weird. So
it's so weird. I love it. It's great.
it's so off kilter, and it's not at all. I grew up in a Star Trek home. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, I had a very deeply ingrained sense of snobbery when it came to my sci-fi. And as a young adolescent, when the show was airing, the Farscape didn't measure up in the couple of episodes that I tried to sample. And so I was like, this is very cool. And so didn't even give it another thought, mm-hmm. Until I got to know Sara a little bit better. Now I have a blast with it, honestly.
And I think Jack missed it entirely. And I just was like, you have to see the show.
Sara was like, do you want to do a podcast? I'm like, yeah, sure. And here we are.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, that was basically it. I'm not a sci-fi fan.
You say that, and yet when we introduce you to sci-fi, you're like, oh, neat. I didn't know it was this.
What, because I like this show?
No, but and most, I think, some of the Star Trek we've introduced you to, you've liked.
I think they're okay, but I haven't been like, oh my god, I want to watch this show now. I mean,
we've only shown them the good stuff, also.
Yeah,
this is true.
That's the key. Show them the good stuff, and then you sneak in all the other stuff later. Yeah. Of like, mm-hmm. now let's watch some Lex and see how you deal with that.
Cleopatra 25/25.
I know what Lex is, actually. Alien I know Nation. What Lex is. That was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
Oh my God, I
saw a few episodes and I'm like, what is this goth dude doing just walking around looking all sad and like, what is going on?
Oh man, that theme song goes so unnecessarily hard. I love it. It's amazing.
I struggle with hard sci-fi, and this show has hard sci-fi elements, but it's very off-kilter, it's very subversive, it's very silly, it's very fun. So mm-hmm. yeah, that's why I'm into this. But it's just I don't know. It's just not a genre that's grabbed me.
You don't identify as a sci-fi fan.
No.
He's a sci-fi ally, is what he is.
Solidarity. I love it. I love it. Sci-fi solidarity.
But still I support it 100%. Yeah.
So we are here to talk about dime dichotomy. And despite my efforts to convince these two when we sat down to watch the episode that it was about playing Yahtzee.
Yahtzee!
It was.
Yeah, this is the one all about death. Dime Dichotomy was written by David Kember and directed by Rowan Woods. Recent events have taken a heavy toll. Moya is badly burned and Crichton is in full breakdown. They need to seek help. And so the crew, along with Krace and Talon, have come to the planet of Takot, a Diagnosin who can heal Moya and John for a fee.
How much?
12,000 kretmas.
During bill negotiations, Takot's assistant and translator, Grunschlick, expositions to Chiana about the Diagnosin's Chekhovian condition. His senses are so acute they can identify any illness. But if his mask is removed outside of a sterile field,
even the Siljot bacteria in your beautiful hair would kill him if he got it in his nose and his mouth at the same time.
Meanwhile, Dargo begs Jothi to see Takot about repairing some scars on his Luxon features. Jothi is resistant and eventually admits that the scars are self-inflicted, a part of his struggles with his identity. In his shock, Dargo becomes withdrawn and short-tempered with Chiana. After Stark proves that his list of ineptitudes extends to haggling, a deal is eventually struck.
Take the 20,000 before it goes up.
And Takot prescribes some healing mist for Moya. Next patient, please. But John isn't in the waiting room. Aaron eventually finds him in Moya's neural cluster, playing with comm signals. He says he's trying to eavesdrop on Krace, but that is a lie. We know what Aaron doesn't. That the Scorpius clone in the neural chip, Harvey, has taken control. John isn't John. He's Harvey in a John suit. And the comm signal is signaling Scorpius. Thinking she's speaking to the man she loves, Aaron opens herself up, saying the words for the very first time. Only it's Harvey John. So he takes advantage and knocks her out. Luckily, Dargo and Jothi are on their way to check out the signal. There's some fancy tongue work from father and son, and John is unconscious, too. Actual John wakes up on Takot's table for a bit of a brain peekaboo, and we get a look at what Harvey really looks like. Creepy, crawly tendrils all up in his gray matter. And the Diagnosin?
There's nothing he can do.
Back on Moya, some of the crew are starting to apply Takot's healing mist. Dargo and Chiana have another awkward encounter.
I'm trying to have a relationship.
And you think I'm not?
That almost leads to a very needed conversation about their relationship, but Starkus interrupts us, and they part even more irritable with each other. On Talon, Krace has a chat with his ship about their desire to have Aaron join them. And at Takot's facility,
splendid news for the patient.
The clinic keeps donor bodies frozen for such occasions, and there is a species here that is a passable match. Zahn is mortified by the freezing process.
We freeze them and micro afford their death because the parts last longer that way.
You have interrupted the course of nature.
Crichton is less interested in the moral implications than in the possibility presented by a species similar to humans. But it will have to wait because Takot wants to supervise Moya's healing before attempting John's chipectomy. So the crew must wait. Moya is responding well to her treatment, but the side effects are getting pilot high.
I am no higher or lower than I've ever been. My position is fixed.
Chiana and Jothi keep him company while bonding over Dargo's mood. Then a doped up pilot tries to help by playing a recording Dargo made of him awkwardly practicing his proposal to Chiana. In the mess, Rigel bargains with Grunschlick for a ship of his own, and on Talon, Kreis asks Erin what her next step might be. Would she consider helping him crew talent? And in the med bay, Zahn is nursing a distressed John. He begs her to join Unity with him. After all, the procedure might fail and so much would be left unsaid. She gives in and in Unity finds that once again, it's Harvey behind the wheel and he forces her to free him. Harvey John signals to Scorpius and heads off in John's module, closely followed by Erin in her prowler for a high-speed air chase. But just when it seems that Erin has bested Harvey, he extends the module's landing gear right into her cockpit, forcing her to eject as her prowler crashes. The shock lets John regain control of his body, just in time to watch his beloved descend into an icy lake.
I hope you meant what you said in the neural cluster. I did.
And then follows the funeral of Erin's son. Heartbroken, John begins the surgery alone. On Moya, the crew mourn and prepare to go their separate ways, as does Kreis and Talon. And in a Connerific moment of horror for the fans, Shiana and Jothi share an almost kiss.
I see your and raise you a
On the planet, things almost seem to be looking up, as the surgery is going well and Turcotte is able to remove the chip. Though there's a complication, it's close to the speech center, and that leaves John unintelligible. And then enter Scorpius. T'Kot greets him as a patient, but alas to Scorpius.
You no longer serve a purpose.
Scorpius removes his mask, triggering the Chekhovian condition, and T'Kot collapses. Scorpius retrieves his chip and leaves John alone, strapped to a table, his brain exposed, unable to utter an intelligible word. And that is where we leave him for now.
So, thoughts?
This episode's so good. I almost don't know what to say. Like, it's just... it's just really, really, really good. What else can I say? I mean, I think one of the standouts for me is the performances. Everybody nails it and just really... drives it home, and of course the writing, but my freaking heart, that's all I can say.
I feel like this episode was able to jam a lot into 42 minutes or 46 mm-hmm. minutes in a way that was
very busy
but barely noticeable. Like by the time we get to the aerial dogfight, it feels like we're watching part two already of some two-parter.
Yeah,
and I think that's by design, because this basically was able to be the denouement for every character and plot arc from the back half of this season. It was just a bunch of wrap-ups. But it did it so fucking well, and absolutely no pun intended, it stuck the landing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's dark. Oh. That is so dark.
Okay.
Too soon. I'm like Erin. Sorry.
That was worse than my attempted segue.
I felt like for me, it even though it was just a typical 46 minute episode. It felt like a longer one, not in like a bad way, but just because the way it's structured. We have, because after the crash, there's like another 10-15 minutes or something like that. It feels like a long one, but not a long one where I'm like, okay, I'm done here. I wanna go and make a coffee or something.
Mandy, what are your initial thoughts?
I wanted to immediately jump off of what Jack said earlier about the performances in this, because everyone's performances in this are just so spot on. Like, I especially want to give a big shout out to Ben Browder, because his back and forth between normal John and Harvey controlling John is so good. Like, I love, he does such a good job of making you really feel like he has been taken over by this dark alternative Scorpy that is in his head. And it just, it makes my skin crawl in a way, like particularly the scene with him and Aaron in the neural cluster. Like, it's so uncomfortable, but it's so good because there's so much dramatic tension in that scene where we know what Aaron does it, and that makes it so creepier and uncomfortable. And I love it every scene with that. And seeing the way that when John is fighting for control, in certain scenes where he's like, you know, don't come after me, I'm not in con. And as soon as he says control, he's like taken over by Harvey again. And it's just so good. It's just so sudden. And I could talk about just Ben Browder's performance alone is amazing, but then everybody else is also at that level, you know, like Claudia Black is so devastating at times. Ugh. Like the fact that she finally says, I love you. And it's not even him. My heart. You
know? I watched the audio commentary for this one.
Oh yeah.
Which is David Kemper and Ben and Claudia.
Oh yeah.
There's some unfortunate comments about, Brunchlick's, the character who plays Brunchlick's body, but there's some interesting stuff on you know how they made some of the choices, because like the licking,
the licking
was something Ben adapted having watched the way that Wayne Pigram plays that character, like he after the whole scene with Natira, like that's where he. That's why he like made that licking choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so good.
Choice. That makes sense. It makes so much sense.
I'm sorry. That's never a phrase I thought I'd hear someone say. Made that licking choice.
But also, because we're talking about Farscape, it makes so much sense that that sentence would be uttered.
I was just about to say that. Yeah. Like, of course.
It's in our name.
and of course there's the double tonguing action.
But father and son though. So.
Yeah.
No kink shaming.
I mean, I don't think that kind of tonguing is done in a you know.
I well, think that's you the know, kind the rule of kink 34. You can shame.
The other thing from the audio commentary that was interesting is Claudia saying that she thinks that in her judgment, this is the first time that Aaron has ever said this to anyone.
Mm. I feel that too. Yeah. I think that's why it took her so long to say it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
It's understanding something brand new for her for the first time in her life.
Yeah, because like there was that other guy, and I think it was The Way We Weren't, she acknowledges it was probably the first man she ever loved, but she never said it to him.
Right.
So the fact that she says it to John, it's like such a big deal. And then it wasn't even John. And then right before she dies, her saying, you know, I hope you meant what you said in the neural cluster, because I know I did. And she's crying and she's about to hit the water. Mm-hmm. Her last words are Crichton and John. And it's, I'm so devastated. I love it.
I really hate that she didn't get to hear him say it. And I know why they did that. It's so we could have that poetic moment where he's over her coffin and he says it. And I'm a sucker for the feelsy, give me all that beautiful poetic feelsy stuff. But then there is a logical part of my brain that's like, she's freaking dead. You should have said it while she was alive. She can't hear you, dude. Like,
queen. Yes.
But it's still
to be so rational in those moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another snippet from the audio commentary, appropriate choice of words, is that the hair, taking the lock of her hair, was also a Ben Browder choice as well. Like he asked David Kemper to just write in like that there would need to be a knife in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so like everyone's reaction to that was all them seeing it for the first time.
Oh,
that's cool. I didn't know that.
And it's because
Anthony Simcoe.
Yeah. Like there may have been a bit of scripting there, but it was largely, you know, worked out on the day. And it was because he'd been making choices about you know, touching her hair or smelling her hair through the build up. So he wanted to have this sort of apparently final note.
Smelling is always just weird to me. I don't know why.
Well, she put the special oil in.
Yeah. I don't know why. For some reason, my brain just goes icky. No, don't smell someone's hair. I don't know.
Not make sure it's consensual hair sniffing only.
Yeah, only consensual hair sniffing.
I don't know why it's so irrational. Even consensual, I'm like,
okay, Jack does not consent to having his
hair sniffed. Okay, don't sniff Jack's hair. I mean, gotcha.
You can if you want. Just don't tell me. Just do it. I consent to not consenting.
Well, consensual non-consent is one of those things that requires a lot of planning.
yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of something I really enjoy about like Claudia Black and Ben Browder's performances, generally speaking anyway, but also in this episode, is like their sort of like physical affection that they show for each other. It has this very like slow, deliberate kind of thing to it. So it's like subtle, when he's kind of like, it's very subtle and it's very sweet and tender. So like when he's like, I don't know, I'm pretending my mic's her for a minute. He's kind of like rubbing very slowly with his nose, like against her nose and all that. I'm just like, oh, that's so sweet. I wish he wasn't being controlled by a creepy Scorpius neural clone right now, but if it was just him, this would be great. Like I and they do that a lot in the show. Like you know, like the very first time they ever kind of kissed, there was this kind of slow build up to it that I still to this day find very like sensual and interesting, the tenderness to it. And that kind of continues on. Like I really enjoy the way they have such chemistry, is what I'm trying to say. I love their chemistry and it comes through in this episode as well.
Yeah,
it's interesting also in the show that they make those kinds of acting choices and blocking choices and writing choices after we've already seen these characters have sex,
right? So right. Like
in a lot of, I feel like especially American media, especially if it's going to be sci-fi, it's going to be sexy, it's going to be titillating. There's going to be, you know, any number of opportunities for objectification and male gaziness. And for Aaron and John, them having sex was almost like first base. The opportunity for them to continue to progress emotionally.
Well, yeah, they didn't really. Removed.
Yeah, it was good, John, also, but we have things to do.
Right.
but they also didn't really act like a couple afterwards. Like this episode was the first like couple-y sort of expression we had seen from them. So. Yeah,
it isn't really will they or won't they bone, like the usual moonlighting thing.
They boned, but then they got on with it.
Yeah, it's will they or won't they actually say they love each other?
Yeah,
right,
and that's where it matters. Yeah,
and it's and I think that's it's very a deliberate choice, because for Aaron, like, she makes a point to say very like earlier in the show that like for peacekeepers, like, yeah, we have sex because like we need to occasionally have that outlet. That's just a thing we do. But the emotional relationships, that's the thing that's more closely regulated, because those kind of relationships can be quote unquote more dangerous. So with John, she's like developing that kind of relationship that the peacekeeper ranks would definitely not be okay with. So it makes it's more meaningful ultimately than just the sex, because the sex is something she's already experienced, but having that emotional connection is something that is way different for her. And that makes the payoff of that relationship just all the greater.
It's morsels of deliciousness.
It's delicious. It's delicious.
I think it's one of the things that makes this opposite sex relationship feel so queer.
Yes.
Is that they have no trouble with the sex. And the found familyness. But like it's all multi-layered of like, what kind of relationship is it? It's they've queered the temporality of the relationship, as well as like even if like I've always said that there's queer gender stuff around Aaron, because she was essentially raised male. Like the all the peacekeepers seem to be, but in a sort of toxic masculinity setting. But the, you know, developing the emotion stuff later and everything, like if there's a there's a gender journey there. And I think there's a queer temporality to the way that they do the relationship, even though this was written and made by straight people.
In right. the early 2000s.
But
we've talked before about as well about how the, especially in John and Aaron's relationship, the I guess kind of classic or traditional or stereotypical gender roles are flipped. Mm. Where John is the emotional one. He's the one who, you know, is like, yeah. Aaron, do you want to cuddle after sex? And Aaron was like, it was fine, John, we've got work to do. And so then they go on, and Aaron, and mm-hmm. that's, to me, it kind of what you were saying, Mandy, that that's what makes Harvey's attack on Aaron that much more evil, because he is using mm. John's emotional intelligence as a weapon.
Right, right. Because
been used as
he
a
knows everything that John action. Knows.
So, talking about all the chemistry stuff, I want to back it up and talk a bit about the other couple who's having their chemistry sour. Like, it's just a mismatch. Like, let's talk about the Chiana and Dargo of it all.
Oh boy.
Initially, I was really struggling with him being such a dick to her. And then they try to like soften it with the proposal, but I'm like, nah, you're still a dick, dude. And she cops it on the chin. She's just, yep, whatever. I know you're going through stuff. It's all good, but God damn, Dargo, chill out, dude. Like, I get it, but come on. It's not her fault.
No.
Yeah, it's one of those things where because we've been watching these characters for so long, part of you watching kind of feels like, oh, I get it, Dargo. That's your son, man. You haven't seen your son in so long, and you're back together, and you have all these emotions. At the same time, you have this, like, romantic relationship, and it can be very difficult to balance those things. I know a lot of parents who, like, dating when you got a kid, that's really hard. But also, like, he's kind of really struggling to communicate in a healthy way with her. And then it's Chiana, and Chiana doesn't react well to not, I don't know exactly how to word this. Chiana's kind of way of dealing with things tends to be, let's go to the impulsive, maybe not most mature way to deal with things too. So you kind of have these two people, one person who's not being able to communicate very well anyway, and then you have Chiana, who also doesn't communicate very well as well for other reasons. And they're not in a good spot right now. Like, when it comes to just the sex, they have great chemistry. When it comes to like the relationship stuff, they don't do so well.
And stay with me, folks. A proposal is not a solution to relationship problems.
Not a solution to, 100%.
It's also not, it's also not an apology. It's no way to say no. Sorry.
Nope.
Yeah. That's why I was like, oh, but I don't know. Like, I was really sour on Dargo this episode. And the Joffy stuff, we'll get to it, but
He's being dickish, and for whatever reasons that are behind that, like, and that's why, like, there's that conversation where they both say they're trying to have a relationship and they almost communicate, but there's too much shit going on, and Stark interrupts them.
And Stark, Stark's high ass over there, like, what's going on, guys? Like,
Stark, man.
Stop it. Stark. I love Stark so much. He's actually my favorite character on the show. But even I'm like, Stark, no, buddy, stop it.
I love him too. But right now I've got like a love-hate relationship with him, because, like, I love him, but I also do not trust him one bit.
He's not always trustworthy. He really isn't. Yeah. Like, he has his own agenda, just like everyone else does.
It's also, for the most part, it's not in intentional. I don't mistrust his intentions, but he's a bit of a loose cannon.
Yeah. He's a wild card at times. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. He is the loosest cannon that ever cannoned.
Yeah.
Just flopping all over the deck.
I have yet to fall in love with Stark's character. The show, whatever is coming up for Stark that other people have experienced and have an opportunity to be like, oh my God, Stark's so great, I love Stark so much. Great, I'm looking forward to it. So far, the show has not earned my investment, loyalty, or care about this character at all. He's very scrappy-do right now.
okay.
not having a good time just in general. You know, every time he comes on the screen, I'm just kind of like, all right, man. And you know, he's got he's got lines that were designed to have chemistry. And that's, you know, with Zahn especially, but that's very much outside of the execution that I've gotten to experience so far with his character.
Yeah. Without spoiling anything, obviously, I think some of the best Stark moments come in season 3 personally. So maybe in season 3, he'll endear himself to you more. If he does it, that's okay. You know, not every character is going to be, there's some characters that come in season 3 that I don't like, in later episodes. So like, it's all good if you don't, but personally, I think Stark has some of the, some really good episodes in season 3. So maybe that'll, excited. We'll see.
Yeah, it's one of the fun parts of this podcast for sure. Cause we also had a really good discussion on Stark a few episodes ago that really helped contextualize his character.
Both as, was that the episode you all did on the second part or the second or third part of the three park episode of Gunslayers and whatever it is?
I think so. Cause it was after he undissolved.
Yeah, because I listened to that episode in preparation for this because I actually hadn't had a chance to sit down and listen to the podcast yet. So I wanted to make sure to listen to it. And I loved it. And I love the conversation around Stark.
You listened to a little of us.
I did. I did. I wanted to be a little familiar with your podcast before it came on. It was like, hey, everybody, I have feelings.
For the full experience, you have to watch the YouTube so you can see Josh's mime action. But yeah, I was making the reading that. I was making the reading that I think that I read him as autistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like I remember that. Yeah.
It really helps recontextualize a lot of like Stark buddy. Read the damn. No. Okay.
Oh, so, you can't. You can't. Right,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Autistic. I like that a lot for reading for him. And then, I mean, obviously this is just built into the character too. It's just traumatized. Yeah. He has a lot of trauma and homeboy hasn't had a chance to deal with it.
I'm a sucker for a tragic character. That was my in. He's very tragic, he triggers my empathy, and so that was my in with Stark.
Mm-hmm. But getting back to Dargo and Shyanna, I have had I have been on the roller coaster the writers wanted me to be on because I was very excited and invested in their relationship when it began. I really liked a lot of the ways that they interacted and that they complimented each other and their personalities and all that kind of stuff. And I also really liked what I thought I'd heard the show saying in the Essential Oils on the Tongue episode where they kissed and, you know, they weren't compatible. And then Shyanna was like, who cares? You know, and like, yes, absolutely. Because compatibility, and can be bullshit, depending upon what context is being placed into, especially if it's like heteronormative baby-making contexts, which it was in that episode. But this episode, I feel many emotions. this is apparently making me Shatner. I didn't realize it, but I'm feeling things about, you know, on the one hand, Dargo is absolutely being a dick to Shyanna. He catches himself and he tries to make it right. And then circumstances intervene. On the other hand, there is a notion of the person that somebody can feel most safe and emotionally vulnerable around, unfortunately, sometimes gets to see the shitty side of them, you know? And so if Dargo is trying to like put on a brave face for Jothi, and as soon as Shyanna comes around, he doesn't feel like he has to mask that. Mm-hmm. Then all of his frustration is unfortunately going to be aimed right at her like a garden hose. But it's Jack, you're absolutely right. Like the way that Shyanna tries so damn hard to be what he needs.
Yeah. We see a lot of like maturity from her. Like, we've seen so much growth, and I think in this episode, we see that growth kind of pay off, you know, because she is so understanding and so calm. I think like, you know, a little while ago, she would have just been like, whatever, dude, I'm going to go and do something else now. Like, fuck you.
Or do someone else. But
do someone else. Yeah.
Which we'll get to. But she's.
Oh, God.
And I should have made my statement that she's trying so damn hard to be what she thinks he needs. Because they still haven't had that conversation.
Right. Yeah.
But it makes it even more heartbreaking. And Gigi Edley, speaking of performances, is reaching right into my eyeball.
Yeah.
Everybody just episode, nails this episode. Just,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the voice actor for Rigel is just, I mean, he's always great, but like, oh my God, he's killing it in this episode too. Like,
God bless.
Right. It's wonderful.
And then we get, well, shortly after my absolute favorite moment in this episode of, I am no higher than I have ever been.
My yes, high pilot.
But high pilot Tupu trying to help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the proposal thing, I think, is so telling, because I was watching and I remember flashback on Josh, you picked up the effect that it has on Chiana when Dargo talks about my wife.
Yeah.
And that very specific choice of words is that he doesn't ask her to have a lifelong relationship with him. He doesn't ask, you know, he doesn't ask her, marry me, Chiana. He says, will you consent to be my wife?
Mm.
When the presence of Lolan is just there, and he's already made all these plans, and
yeah,
like just, and you can see in Gigi's face, like all that she's performing of the reaction to that of just panic.
Mm-hmm. I believe her exact line is just, what? And it just has so many layers in it. Just like, the fuck. But also, yeah, like, wait a second, like your wife, like you mean Lolan, yeah, like be like that, like with this woman you have on a huge pedestal because she's dead, who I could never in a million years live up to. Like, yeah, it's she does so much with just that one line and that look on her face.
Yeah, yeah, I get the feeling that it's something she's never even considered, like being married or being, you know,
I don't think she has such a committed
thing with somebody.
Because we've seen her Navari upbringing. We've seen how institutionalized everyone's roles in society are.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, she hasn't considered, you know, marriage.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially with how much of her life she has now spent just like running away. That's her, and her whole mm-hmm. life is running away yeah. from things. So the idea of like settling down in one spot and just being there, that's terrifying to her. Because not only is it scary on a vulnerable emotional level, but it's literally scary on a physical level, because what if her people find her? Like, that's terrifying to her. So mm-hmm. yeah, she does a lot with that line. It's really good.
And the other thing that I was just flashing back on is for Dargo, all the way back on the planet of the lotus eating red people, we had that finished when Zahn says to him, those kinds of dreams, the finding a place to farm and settle down and have a home, and those dreams are not found, they are built. And he's trying to force it rather than build it.
Yeah.
Mm.
So
yeah. I always remember that episode as the one where Dargo absolutely blasted the woman's back out.
Dargo got laid a lot in that episode.
Yes. Really did.
She was limbering up. So like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Full blooded Luxon, everybody. Watch out.
And can you blame her? I mean,
I don't.
You know?
I have a, he's my beautiful himbo, tentacled himbo zaddy.
He is such very, a himbo. I love Dargo.
Specific.
But he is being very himbo in this moment. He's not thinking things through.
No.
He's not. And part of the problem is he is trying to build what he's trying to rebuild what he lost.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than move forward with what he's got,
create something new.
Yeah.
And it's kind of makes for a great mirroring of the two relationships, that Dargo is trying to force something that is not coming together, and that is causing fractures, and Harvey is trying to break something that has been very well built.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he's able to do it because of his emotional intelligence and like using that as a weapon. And Dargo is failing because of his lack of emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
Everybody else's lack of emotional intelligence, because like Stark and Pilot and their highness breaking in.
Mm-hmm. And it's also interesting to sort of compare what's happening with like Dargo and Shyanna to what's happening with Zan and Stark. Like at this point in the show, they haven't really been established so much as like a romantic pairing. But Stark does say to Zan, like, I would like my future to be with you, basically. Like he says, I would like to, whatever your next step is, I'd like to be with you. And I've always gotten this kind of like asexual queer romance between the two of them vibes. Like I've never felt like Zan and Stark necessarily boned. Maybe they did. But if they did, it, that wasn't the focus of the relationship. Like it always felt more about like this interesting spiritual, emotional connection. And with the two of them, it feels it's an interesting sort of contrast between what's happening with Dargo trying to force this future that he wants and Stark saying, hey, whatever your future is, I just want to be there with you because I just care about you. And he's very open to whatever that ends up being. Like he's giving Zan that opportunity to say what that future is. And it's Zan. So, of course, she wants to take care of Pilot and Moya because it's what Zan wants to do, obviously. And so that's probably where he's going to be. But you know what I mean? Like there's this kind of openness to like whatever your future is, I want to be a part of it. Whereas Dargo is saying, I want you to be my wife. And that's very different. Yeah.
He's like, I've written this future and this is where you fit.
Right. I've written out the script. This will go well, I'm sure. Just play your role, please.
I would like to accompany you. They did, by the way, they did have a mind fuck that reversed time.
So. That's true. They did do that. But that I never felt like that was necessarily like a sexual mind fuck. That was a, you know, saving the world mind fuck.
I think there's always something sexual about it. There's always something.
I mean, there's sexual, always a little
sensual.
I don't know. They're in their own kind of plant magic people.
They're on a whole different level. Who knows what's going on there exactly? But I've always thought their relationship was very interesting because it doesn't quite line up with what you expect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So. But
that, I mean, his proposal is just stunning.
Yeah.
You know, it's enough to make you forget that he is a, you know, complete.
That he's a Stark.
He's a Stark. That he he's completely unreliable, the loosest of loose cannons.
Yep.
Doesn't
do well under pressure.
I love his name because I can only ever hear the rest of the idiom Stark raving mad every time I hear it.
Yeah, but just the like, I whatever your future is, I'd like to accompany you on it. Is just like that is just such a lovely way to express that.
Mm.
And maybe if Dargo had talked to people, Dargo, he might have said something like that.
There's a whole lot of theme crocheting happened in this episode, which I really love. And Dargo for sure can't let go. That's his whole crux this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And he spells it out when he's talking to Aaron on the radio while she's having the dog fight with Harvey. He says, don't hesitate. And she goes, what makes you think I will? And he goes, because I would. Dargo can't let go.
I like that moment.
That's his whole thing this episode, is that he can't let go. And moving forward, every time Dargo is framed in this episode, damn near every time Dargo is framed in this episode, he's framed in the burned corridors of Moya.
Mm-hmm.
He's never in the healed portions, except when he's in the command center there during Aaron's scene.
Mm.
And so it's very much like he is trapped in his own scars, you know.
Mm.
And it's some good shit. And I got to I rewatched the episode because for those of you who are listening or watching, it's been a few weeks since Jack and I got to have our minds blown live for you. But I wanted to make sure that I remembered everything. And so I got a chance to kind of lean in a couple of times and pay attention.
Sign up to the Patreon to see that aforementioned mind blowing.
The live reaction.
That's really what jumped out to me, though, about Dargo's character is he can't let go of this episode.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's the the stubborn tough guy that pissed me off in the beginning of the show. I just don't jive with that. I don't vibe with it. And so I'm like, that is to me, it's just boring. I find it boring. There's not much to it for me anyway.
I think often in a lot of characters, it can be boring. Mm-hmm. But I think when we see it come from a real place, mm-hmm. then there's something that, because I appreciate a tank with a heart of gold. That's mm-hmm. why I love himbos. You know, so like him sort of feeling wounded or whatever, that he goes back to this hard shell.
Yeah.
As a defense, the way that people go back to their old selves when they're feeling vulnerable, because
yeah.
that's what Chiana's doing. Mm.
But I love vulnerability.
Yes. But I think the thing is that what you're seeing, what you're reacting to is the thin, very, very thin shell over the well of vulnerability.
The carameling nougat.
Yeah. Like when Dargo is that shell, like busting through that shell, love him. He's freaking amazing. But when we see this armor back on, I'm like, oh, whatever, dude. Like whatever. Yeah, oh my god, you're so tough and strong and silent. Like, shut up.
Art, honey. Stories have to have art.
I know.
Growth is hard. Is rarely a straightforward line. Sometimes you do loop de loops backwards for a little bit. Yeah. But that is fair. Because like I think
I'm being impatient.
Yeah, I want to smack. I want to smack him and get him into like stop doing this and behave and like sit
you
down.
You
want to
smack him,
right?
Huh?
Just give him a little smack on the butt. I Dargo's one of those characters where, I mean, all the characters, you see such growth throughout the show, but there's something about Dargo's growth in particular where he started off always angry, always in that like, I am a warrior, Luxem, I'm a man, I'm very masculine kind of thing. And then he grows and he starts being more vulnerable and letting down his guard more. And so whenever the guard kind of goes back up, there is this moment of like, oh, come on, man, like you've done so well. But I still recognize that, like, okay, I know he's working on it. My little himbo, he's doing his best. Like he's working on it. Yeah. You know, it's okay, sweetie. We'll work through this together. You know,
you're being a dumbass, but I believe it's going somewhere.
Yeah.
This is his process. You know, he has to be a dumbass for a little bit.
With it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. I mean, you know,
you're being a dumbass, but I feel like it's going somewhere.
Yeah. Well, or my character growth.
Unfortunately, real people don't have character arcs necessarily.
Our character arcs are weirder. They're kind of all over the place.
A lot longer, and I feel like I've had a character arc, but I don't know. I'm the main character in my show, so I don't know.
We have great character arcs, but in life, there's no endings. There's no season finales.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
There's cliffhangers aplenty, but there's no season finales.
I do not recommend hanging around when someone is being a dumbass to see if they'll grow, unless they're a fictional character.
No, get out of there. Get the fuck out of there.
Then get out. Yeah. No, very true.
Speaking of being a dumbass,
there it is.
Gianna's response. To feeling trapped.
Okay, hang on.
Josh?
Uh-oh.
So, we're here now, so I'm gonna
okay.
Thoughts.
I am watching very closely in the scene where Chiona and Joffy almost. I didn't see that it was Chiona's response.
Hmm.
I saw Joffy lean in to kiss her and her pull back.
Yes.
Did I miss something?
No, you're right.
Okay.
I
mean,
I think the chemistry is building the whole time. Chemistry.
I don't see any chemistry there.
There's a connection that's kind of, I don't know, what's the
connection is Dargo. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think like they're developing a bond because Dargo is being a dumbass to both of them, and that's drawing them closer to each other. But also, I don't know what to call the chemistry.
Chemistry. Something I want to point out, because I'm so glad this got brought up. Something I noticed in this episode is that a lot of the times when stuff's going on, the only person that's there with Chiana is Jothi. Yes. So like during the whole Aaron dogfight scene, Darko's by himself at the command center. Chiana's with Jothi.
Yes.
When they are at the funeral, even though Diargo is nearby to Chiana, almost every time that they're shooting, like they're doing the wider shots, if you look, Diargo is still a little bit ahead of Chiana and Jothi. And then also, like in some of the shots of them together, like they're not in the same shot. So you have Diargo and then you have Chiana and Jothi. So throughout the episode, they are being framed as being kind of in this together in a way that is even sort of adding to that alienation that's happening between Diargo and Chiana. And so I think part of why they have this like kind of quote unquote chemistry or whatever you want to call it is because Chiana is losing one of her dearest friends, this person that is part of her found family. And the only person that she feels like she can turn to right now, because Dargo's being a bit of a jackass, is his son, who has a little bit of a resemblance to him. So I think that's kind of what's happening a little bit, is there's this like, I need somebody to help me get through this. And oh, hey, this guy's here. Like, cause like that scene when Jothi leans in to kiss Chiana, she does start to pull away, but then she starts to go back into it again. And then they get interrupted before the deed happens.
That's fair.
And,
that's fair.
You know what I mean? So like there's this kind of hesitancy there, but then there's also this feeling of like she's clearly also grappling with her feelings and is also reacting in a little bit of a Chiana way, where she's like, well, how do I usually deal with my feelings? I usually kind of like just fuck them away or something. The guy usually fucks busy. So you know what I mean, like doesn't make it okay, does not make it okay, but I get the logic.
And Jothi is opening up to her while Diargo is closing himself off.
I do see all that, but I also marry that with a line, no pun intended, I put that together with the line when she does start to call him out on his BS, and she tells Diargo, no one else has lived and died for finding your son more than I have. And so if future stepmom is seeing, brand new, rescued from enslavement child, also getting yanked around a little bit, she might also try to reach out to Jothi to try to mother him a little bit. What I read in this episode was Jothi in his going back and forth, adolescent, ragey, hormony kind of resentmentiness. A lot of terrible words. He
his Connor was.
Thank you. For those of you who haven't seen Angel the series, it's great.
Except for that season.
Sorry, don't get started.
We're here to talk Farscape. If I open that, I'm not going to shut up.
He is either misconstruing or seeing an opportunity to hurt his dad. More than I see Chiana reaching out to him for comfort. I see Chiana reaching out to him to comfort.
Yeah.
And maybe that's me putting a lot more on this than actually is there, but no, I do that.
Yeah. So. speaking of Angel again, maybe I just want to feel something besides the cold kind of deal. I just gotta say, I just hate it. I hate the whole thing. I hate the Jothi stuff.
That I agree with.
Once again, I find myself wishing like the last few episodes that I gave a shit about this, but I just don't. Like the whole series, I've been like, oh, I can't wait until we see Jothi, and now I'm just like, can he go away? Like I just don't care. I'm sorry. I don't care. Like, I really want to, but this drama is just so forced. They haven't spent enough time fleshing it out. They haven't earned it. It's just not good. And then when he tries to kiss her, I was like, oh, fuck off. Just stop.
That was my reaction as well.
Like,
just fuck it's, off, yeah.
It's so forced. It's manufactured. Like, yes, it's manufactured. It's a TV show, but this doesn't feel all organic in any way. It just feels like drama for the sake of drama, and I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
I regret to inform you that this is the first part of a two-parter. There will be more. There will be more discussion on this in the next episode.
Yeah, I'm trying to be careful not to say too much right now because I'm like, I have feelings, but I can't talk about it because it's season three stuff.
One of our favorite activities on this show is gauging and then pushing Sarah's poker face.
Yeah.
When Jack and I make points or make predictions or make, well, surely they'll never. And Sarah just has to sit there and be like,
questions shall like be
biting the inside.
Some questions will be answered and other questions will not be answered.
Yeah.
I have to do the same thing. I have a buddy that we purposely watch bad TV shows about once a week. Like we go through and we've been watching all these shows. We've watched some episodes of like Riverdale and Z Nation and things like that. Right now we're watching iZombie, which if you all have never seen before, it's a police procedural where a zombie helps solve crimes by eating brains. It's great. It's not good, but it's great. You know what I mean? It's very silly.
That sounds like you know, concept built by Mad Libs,
right? It does. Like, who came up with this? It's weirdly fun at the same time, and things get ridiculous. Like, eventually, all of Seattle is like a quarantine zone with zombies. But anyway, I've seen the show before, and my friend hasn't. So sometimes he'll make a prediction that I know the answer to. I'm like, I can't say anything because I don't want to spoil it for you.
Yeah.
But on the subject of spoilers, I spoiled something in the last recording. When I mixed up the whole conversation about Jothi's scars, and I thought that came in the last episode, but it was anyway. So now we can talk about the situation with Jothi's scars.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Those are self-inflicted, you know.
Yeah.
Jothi himself is the situation.
I just don't care. Like, you know what? It's all the drama makes sense on paper, but it's all too soon. It's all too rushed. You haven't earned this. Jothi, please just shut up.
I mean, I care, I guess, but
I'm curious to see where it's going to go. I hope they make me care in the end, but right now I'm just like, go away. Whatever.
I care because I care about Dargo. Mm-hmm. And right now, Jothi is little more than a plot inducer for Dargo.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that is fair. Like, as much as I don't think I'm as bothered as Jack is about Jothi, I do still think that he is kind of ultimately, unfortunately, a little bit of a plot device. He's kind of almost like a MacGuffin, an alien MacGuffin in a way.
100%, yeah.
And like, I think that does sort of weaken the character. But I also, there is, I think what you just said about, you know, I care about Jothi because I care about Dargo. That's kind of where I'm at too, where like, I don't necessarily care that much about Jothi as a person, because at this point, he hasn't been in the show for very long. We're still getting to know him. He is coming off a little bit like angsty teenager who's like, yeah, you don't really understand my pain, Dad. It's like, you don't know what Dargo's been through, okay? Yeah. You know what he's been through? Do you remember the time he bashed his head and thought you were on the ship as a child? That was really traumatic, but okay, Jothi. Like, you know, like there's that element to him for sure. But there is also like, I do care about Dargo. So I am still like, oh, well, his son's here and maybe they'll figure it out. Maybe they need to go play some catch together or something and make up for all those years Dargo wasn't around.
I hope you're able to sample the audio of when Mandy said Jothi just now, because that tone and is exactly Jothi. That is exactly how I feel.
He's a plot point.
He has yet to become a character.
Because they're a big part of why I don't like him. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of
that's fair. You
know, looking forward to season three. There's a lot of great opportunity for, son, I haven't been where you've been, but my clavicles got chained to the wall one time. And that's why I have these awesome piercings that are actually really hardcore.
Right. I got chained unconsensually and then a bunch of times consensually, but we won't talk about those.
So the self-harm, and I guess part of why I'm interested, I've yet to really form an opinion about it, this is because I'm sure by the time this is posted, put content warnings in front of it, but it's very much like the notion of it isn't about Dargo as much as it was about Dargo. It's not about Dargo. Mm-hmm. And so Dargo being like, you really hate me that much, son. was very much like, that's not how that works, you know, and like Jothi then does the thing that can happen in real life when a loved one tries to make someone else's pain about them. He says, don't worry, Dad, it's different now. And like tries to reassure Dargo as he's standing there with a bald face because of choices that he made.
Yeah.
It's so like, I'm interested to see where all this kind of goes, mm-hmm. because I'm hoping that it goes somewhere more interesting than where it is currently.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
I know in the episode I listened to, you all had an interesting conversation about sort of like the way mixed race people, like multi-race people, are being treated in this universe. And I think that in a way, this could almost be an extension of that conversation, in the sense that you have, yeah. Like the idea is that, oh, you cut yourself because you hate me, your dad, so much. And it's like, well, maybe it's less about Dargo and more about that Luxon side, because he's been told his whole life being Luxon is the part of him that makes him like lesser. You know, you're just like part big brute. We don't care about you. If you were full blooded Sebastian, then you'd be fine. But you're part this other thing. So that self-hatred seems to have kind of come from that internalized dialogue that he's been hearing this his whole life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which was really well connected in a, you know, malevolent mustache twirling kind of way between Jothi and Scorpius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
And I think it's a thing that maybe because the actor is so young that they're not up to it, that has sort of been everybody else's response around him has told us more about that than he's been able to.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, like we had the way that Braca and the other guy just spoke about him right in front of him.
Yeah, literally in front of him.
And we didn't even linger on his reaction shot of that. We just were presented with his reaction. And then like, so I feel that this is a wasted opportunity because there is something really interesting there.
Yeah. I'm disappointed because of that. Yeah.
Yeah. But because especially like as a mixed person and as a person who's had, you know, who carries some self-inflicted wounds, you know, and has complicated issues with my body, like I relate to the well that is there, but the execution is not getting to it, you know, and the writing
lately.
I love David Kemper as a writer. And I think like so much of this episode is brilliant, but I don't think he gets to that, to what needs to be there for that. And again, the actor is young and, you know, he just made this doesn't seem to be something that he has access to get the emotional beat, because like people talk about acting like it's pretending, but it's not. It's finding the truth of the character in yourself and building that, and that requires experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, and life experience and acting experience, and it is a craft. And it's the part of the reason why teenage characters are often so bloody annoying is because the actors just, when the actors are teenagers, they often don't have that. Like, why we joke about this being Connorific and reminding us of Connor from Angel, but the actor there, Vincent, I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Kartheiser.
Has since done much better work when he got some experience and, oh, being a horrible jackass on Mad Men. But, you know, part of the why he's what he is in Angel is because he's just so young and inexperienced that, you know, sometimes people can get to, you know, sometimes people can do that young, but often they can't. And, you know, you end up with something resembling Attack of the Clones, sand.
Oh, God.
And coarse and rough, and it gets everywhere.
Yeah. That was also a feature of bad writing. But like, that's
freaking George Lucas, man. Holy shit.
Jesus.
So, like, I know you said that Matt Newton turned out not to be a great guy, so maybe I shouldn't be worried about, and he won't see this, so I probably shouldn't be worried about offending his feelings. But Yeah. He just really didn't have, doesn't have the chops.
About a decade ago or so, he really went off the rails, drugs and alcohol and abusing his girlfriend. And he's been very, very quiet since then. So hopefully he's gotten his shit together and worked on himself and made amends.
Hopefully.
But he went through a really bad period there.
Someone who's acting young can really not help a person.
Also born into show business. His father was Bert Newton, who was very famous Australian entertainer since like the beginning of television in this country. So kind of like Australian TV royalty in a way. Died a couple of years ago, a year or two or two ago. But so that probably didn't help either, I dare say.
From what we're told, at least I'm not a child actor that can fuck you up.
So anyway, that's maybe going too much into that, but I think there is good theme stuff and interesting stuff, and the whole idea of having a self-inflicted wound is very thematically Farscape with everything that's going on.
Yeah.
But and like the wanting to cut out the part of you that doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of room to go there,
mm-hmm.
but the just
it's so okay, forced just, right
we're,
now.
We're,
it's
we're doing with
there.
A teaspoon,
yeah.
and it's just
well,
not.
Yeah. You can go there thematically the way that they're doing with Moya, where Moya's burnt innards are reflective of everybody's current turmoil, and if you go there literally, like you have with Jaffe. Where he literally self-harmed, then to just bounce off of it so quickly the way they did in this episode doesn't serve it very well. And
nope.
doesn't serve it as a representation very well.
Yeah. But it is, other than that, it's a remarkable episode.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Honestly, yeah, it really is the only gripe I have with this episode.
Yeah, I really love this episode. Yeah. I was thinking earlier to myself that to me, this is kind of like the Empire Strikes Back of like Farscape episodes. Like it ends on this like really horrible low note. But at the same time, you're just like, so like, oh my God, that was really amazing. And I love so much about what they did in this. Like there's a lot that they do. I think, Jack, you said earlier that it's one of those episodes that you think it's longer than it is because they fit so much in it, but it doesn't, the pacing is great. Like the pacing does not ever feel like there's any slack in there.
It just feels long. Yeah.
It's just, they just pack in a lot. I mean, there's so much that happens in it. So like it's a great episode. It's too bad that you have like a couple that's really the one big problem with it. The rest of it is just like chef kisses for me for the most part.
If you're gonna put a major character death in an episode and it not feel rushed, like that is an accomplishment.
Yeah. Plus, we haven't even talked about that we got two fascinating new characters.
Yes. The Diagnosic and Grunschlick. Everyone keeps pronouncing his name wrong for some reason.
He's eating his vegetable snow cone or whatever the hell that thing was.
He grosses me out so much, and I get that's the point, but he kind of reminds me of like a cracked out Billy Connolly or something, like I don't know.
So yes, definitely, that's
a bit.
I'll cop to that.
He reminds me actually a lot of a character that was in it would have been season one. The what's her name? She's the lady they go to see, and then Aaron goes blind when the blood runs clear. That character.
Sarah loves her.
Yeah, that's who he kind of reminds me of a little bit. Like he's not quite the same character, but there's that same kind of slickness to him, the way he acts.
suddenly her name is escaping me, and I'm just thinking of the actor's name, which is Magda.
Magda Zubansky.
Yes. I believe in that episode I actually do a little dance for queer fat representation.
Yes, you do.
Furlough. Her name's Furlough.
Thank you. Yes.
Damn.
Yeah.
It's going to drive me up a wall. I had to look it up.
It's weird that the name fell out of my head and I like to think it was the actor's name. But no, Furlough is awesome. And actually a bit about fat representation with Brunschlick. This sort of fat guy is gross and eats a lot.
Yeah.
Could be really bad representation, but it doesn't actually bother me because we have already had fat representation. So it's not like, and Furlough isn't like this. Like they're both sort of out for themselves. They could be cousins, but she's not like eating all the time. Sure. She isn't physically like a gross out character. And so it doesn't feel like it doesn't have that sting that a character like this might have as a fat person watching. He's just one fat person in the world.
Sure. Yeah. I also feel like the focus is more on his grossness rather than him being fat and eating and stuff. It's more just like the scabs and like he freaking the doctor sneezes on his hand and he licks it. Honestly, watching, I wasn't even thinking about him being like fat and eating. Like I was just grossed out.
I couldn't describe his outfit if you forced me to, but I can absolutely describe his mannerisms.
Yeah.
Shout out to the prop department because everything he's eating just looks so gross. Weird and unappetizing. Like Farscape's prop department does very well all the time. And sometimes the stuff they have, I'm like, oh, I would try that. That looks delicious. None of that he's eating do I want to try.
No, not his pink oatmeal. No.
You usually what they did was go to like the Asian markets and various ethnic food markets and like mix stuff up weirdly.
Oh yeah.
So you often get stuff that looks very appetizing and also weird because it's unusual to us and because it's like presented upside down and mixed with something else.
Right,
I mean, some of this looks like they just made porridge with food coloring for.
It does.
But it works.
I liked both of their characters a lot. One of the reasons why was because of how, I guess it's an overused word, but subversive each of their characters were, you know, the way that the monstrous looking doctor turns out to be so like gentle and delicate.
You even have the voice up here.
Yeah. They're almost very femme.
Yeah.
In a way. Yeah.
Faye was what came up for me. Faye,
better word for it. Yeah.
Well, her name, the person who did the voice is named Fiona Gentle and is actually was one of the puppeteers who read the lines on set and they went and they decided to have to cast her on that rather than they often would have one of the puppeteers do the voice.
But the character's male, right?
Yes,
I believe the character's male. Yeah,
I mean they use mask pronouns, but the character is alien.
I was just because at first I thought their character was a female, but then they were referring to him as he. So I was like, oh, okay.
That's interesting. We don't know what the genders of diagnoses are.
Sure,
we have
diagnoses.
We only know pronouns or mask.
I also thought it was really interesting having a doctor be so susceptible to disease. I thought that was just a really interesting idea that they kind of did something with it too. So I thought that was really
cool. It is very much a Chekhov's illness.
Mm.
Yeah.
Sure.
Set this up and then we're going to definitely play off of that later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Murray's going to pay off later, not play off.
They also did a really good job. I mean, Scorpius spells it out for the audience. He comes in and goes, "You can heal anything but oneself. You know, physician, heal thyself."
Looks right into the camera. Do you get it? Do you see the irony?
Dark space walls. Everybody got that?
Yeah.
So, but then with Gunschlick, he once again, initially seems very like out for himself. Green ship. He seems very out for himself.
Crunch bull.
Selfish and manipulative and a bully. And he winds up being just kind of a big old empathetic softy by the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of fun, like theme threading that they were doing with those two characters for the rest of what was going on this episode.
Yeah, I really like when the doctor and John are alone. And so that the doctor has to just talk to him about like, okay, I'm going to touch different parts of your brain to try and get this weird mesh off. And you're going to have to tell me what you're seeing. And he hits the one part where he sees all his memories of Aaron and John doesn't say a word. And Andy, the doctor goes, we're going to keep that, because the doctor knows that he just touched something important. And it's just like, oh, it's so good.
I was, my jaw was agape during her death. My eyes were a little misty during her funeral, but I didn't start crying until that scene.
Until that moment, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I watched it again the day before yesterday, so I've seen it three times now, I think. The last time I watched it, I broke when John says, baby, you're not gonna die like this. I was like, it just, both of their performances during that sequence are just so good. And I love how he's just begging her, please, like, save yourself. You have to save yourself. She's like, I can't. There's nothing I can do. I don't know what to say. It's just devastating and brutal and beautiful, and just if you're gonna kill a character, a beloved character, that's how you freaking do it.
Rip your heart out and show it to me. that's what I want.
That's what they did. They ripped my heart out and threw it on the floor and stomped on it. And I was like, do it again.
Yeah. Right. And it's Farscape, so they definitely will.
This show is making me a masochist, but it was fucking Rigel. During her death scene, you know, the camera cuts, it quick cuts to Dargo's reaction, Jothi and Chiana holding each other, Zan and Stark holding each other, and then it fucking cuts around to Rigel and he puts his hand over his mouth.
Yeah, just
and
like
I lost it.
Like, and it's like his hand's like kind of shaking too. Like the puppeteering is so good because it's like shaking and his expression is like, holy fuck, she's about to die. And you can tell that he doesn't want that to happen.
No dialogue.
It's perfect. Just
a god dang puppet.
And it's a puppet. Yeah. Like that's makes the thing. It's cry. A fucking puppet. Holy shit. Yeah.
And then he gives her one of his possessions.
Yep.
Sarah.
That is peak Rigel, dude. Oh my god.
No greater expression of love from this character that has been so well established.
Yeah. Because he's giving
something away.
Selfish.
And it's some kind of like sash or something, which you were meant to sort of take, I imagine, as one of his like royal ornaments or something. Right. And that which makes it even all the more important because, you know, that's his whole goal in life is to eventually take, you know, control of his throne again. So for him to give that up to her, like, shows how much he cares about Aaron. That whole funeral scene is so beautiful when they're when Zan's like doing the chant and slowly one by one everyone's saying the Ameds, or because I don't think they're actually saying amen, I think they're saying amet or something like that. It's similar like vibe. And the music is playing and, you know, everyone has their moment with her, and it's
and Dargo gives her
his Quilta blade.
I have a feeling this isn't going to be a permadeath, and as much as I love Aaron, I don't want her to come back because I feel like it would cheapen this. I don't know. Like I think that death was so beautiful. Then I think bringing her back is going to take something away from that. But I think in saying that, it depends on how they do it. If she just appears and says, "Oh, the space magic brought me back because my time isn't done," fuck off, go away, like go back to your coffin. Like, but if they did it in a way that was, I don't know, that was good, in a way that was that makes sense and is meaningful and whatnot, cool. But
one of my favorite stories from the making of Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, is when the story idea came around as they were writing the movie of Spock's got to die. And for any number of reasons, not the least of which is Leonard Nimoy felt very done with the character back in 1982. But the whole, like, everybody in the writer's room who had been with the series and had joined the actors on the convention circuit and all the producers and everybody was like, yeah, but you can't kill Spock. Like, you can't kill Spock. And the new to Star Trek was not remotely beholden to any of the lore. Writer director Nick Meyer was like, well, of course you can. It just depends on how you do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what I was going to say, Jack, is what she said about how they bring her back will make it matter.
Yeah. 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 But,
no
yeah,
comment.
I don't know. I just feel like
you. Thank you. Each other right now, saying nothing.
They put her in one of those pods of people that are close to 10 death. So that means something. They didn't bury her. They didn't
cremate her.
Yeah, exactly. So I think she's gonna come back. And yeah,
I've seen the abyss.
I just hope that it's done well, or else it's going to make what we just saw mean a lot less. Well, not a lot less, but a bit less for me.
Yep. So the other pair we haven't talked about is Krayce and Talon.
So I'm super curious what this secret is. That's all I really got to say there. Yeah. Oh, and I love that Krayce is even crying. Like that was like, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That was
he actually screams, doesn't he? Doesn't he do a full like, like kind of grabbing his head kind of thing? Yeah. He's not happy. Which is interesting because like Krayce's growth as a character is very interesting on the show too, to see him get to that point, because originally his whole character was just I'm gonna kill John Crichton, and mm-hmm. eventually Scorpius showed up and was like, no baby, you go sit in the corner, we don't need you anymore. And Krayce is like, well, how am I gonna do?
And then so, Aaron gave him his life.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
She sure did. And I really have enjoyed the progression since then of Krayce, seeing this. I mean, it's still Krayce, but he is a bit gentler, and he mm-hmm. is making these new, well, he has this new connection with Talon, obviously, but he's still kind of connecting to the rest of the crew and everybody, but especially also more Aaron.
Sort of three dimensional too. He's been, because at first he's a little,
I didn't like Krayce at first villain. He was too cartoony for me initially. Mm. I did not like Krayce. It wasn't really until Scorpius showed up and then Krayce's whole life got turned upside down that I started to like Krayce. All once right. he became like, once he like had his fall from grace and he started to like be on the same level as the rest of the characters, mm-hmm. then I started to like Krayce. Initially, I didn't like him. I thought I hated the that old Black Magic, I think is the episode that he's in where he and John are just running around trying to kill each other as the magic space vampire dances around. I hate that episode. I don't like it. I just don't think it's a good one. So like once Krayce had that moment of like being kind of like thrown out of the peacekeepers and all that, I was like, okay, now he's more interesting to me. But initially I didn't like Krayce.
I really liked that Krayce was the one arguing with Talon for like, no, it has to be Officer Soon's choice to join us.
Mm.
Like, who are you, my guy, where you're supporting autonomy and you know, personhood? Like, what the hell, man?
It is interesting because like Talon as a character too is very interesting, because like Talon starts off as just Moya's baby boy, and then he goes off, he runs away with an older man, which sometimes happens with our children, and
sure.
comes back and he's like, no, I'm like an adult now, but he's still very much like a young child. He's almost like a jockey in a way. He's very angsty. He reconnects with Moya and is still a little bit like, yeah, but you don't get to control me, mom, you don't know what I'm like, you know.
And then he's different
than you.
Blows to smithereens anybody who looks at Moya wrong.
Yeah.
Because the Jothi and Talon connection has been drawn ever since, like, we learned about Jothi the same episode that Talon got conceived.
Oh! Yeah.
When Dargo broke down the shield.
Yeah.
And said Dargo and Moya are two moms. They're calling it these parents. Days.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, there's that. And yeah, that, angsty teen who likes his weapon a bit much.
His phallic shaped weapon. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's the connection that, you know, Chiana midwife Talon.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps is trying to be a bit mothery or something.
That's how I read it.
Well,
stepmothery.
And yeah, there's a, yeah. So I don't know. I think there's definitely themes, and I think they're more successful with Talon. The voiceless, bodiless ship intelligence.
Well,
oh, just, he has a voice. It's a series of little beeps.
Right. Yeah.
If you're gonna,
it doesn't have a voice for us to understand. He just has
We get to put a lot on Talon because Talon has no voice, but Jothi has a voice, and Jothi has spoken, and Jothi is Connor. We've also had a much better, I think, proxy for Talon than we have had for Jothi in Krace, because Talon's growth has been reflected by Krace's growth.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Like we've seen in a lot of ways, we've seen Krace come out of his angst teenager phase since becoming the shipmaster of Talon.
Yeah, I mean, I think he still has plenty of angst, but it's more refined.
It's his beard has gotten more well goateed.
Oh my god! Whenever Krace would like Hulk out in the early season of like early season one, and just like his hair would be all frizzy, and it's like, oh, unconditioned Krace coming through, everybody, watch out! And now he's a lot more groomed and
He hasn't been to the manicurist in hours,
right? Mm. Yeah. But yeah, like you said, the kind of setup that they do of like, oh, we have the secret thing we want to show Erin. This would have made her really happy, but now she's dead. Like they really set that up really interestingly, and maybe they'll do something with it, or maybe they won't. I won't say.
But it's also like I think we definitely by now can tell he's got a thing for Erin.
Well, yes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't scream your coworker's name when they die. He's literally got
a
thing
for Erin, and he romantically probably has a thing for Erin.
In the speech where he's inviting her, there's like his blocking. He's like got his arms like inch, not touching her, but sort of surrounding her. It's very operatic. He's
very close to her in this like, not giving her a lot of space, like kind of in the same. It's almost interesting to pair like his blocking against the blocking that John has with Erin, because with John, you see that reciprocity of like the two of them kind of playing off each other, whereas Erin is very stiff still with Krace. So when he kind of is circling around her, she's not really responding to him in the same way that she responds to John, obviously. Like she's reacting to him, but there's this kind of still like, I don't know about you, dude, which, you know, fair.
Yeah, I mean, he's not quite, I guess, like he's not total top shelf space Hitler, but he's very much like space abuser.
He used to work for the space Hitlers, so like,
for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's definitely space ex abuser, and so like Erin is nowhere near ready to be like remotely vulnerable. So like her thing, thank you, Dim, at the end of the episode was like, oh my, like, just like
it
has a very operatic feel to me, like the sort of setup of like the two lovers, and then the usually a baron or something who's trying to take her away. And you know,
I will offer her this wealth and this adventure, and I will sneak her away, and she won't want to be with that pretty boy over there. Yeah,
and then they'll be reunited right when she's dying.
Of course.
It's like it has Verdi, or perhaps Puccini, even like definitely in the mix there.
It's definitely got it's giving FUD. It's giving kill the wild, kill the wild.
Well, I haven't thought about that in like 30 years.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that. But,
and then at the end being like, what have I done?
Yeah.
I killed the rabbit. Yeah.
It's giving FUD.
Yes. Whatever your operatic reference points are.
I'm cultured, damn it.
from Buddy Wagner.
I'm right there with you, Josh.
Anything else you want to cover?
We touched on it, but just Ben Browder's Harvey performance again is just so good. I love his cadence, his mannerisms, the expressions. He freaking nails it. Also, I love all the artsy, so surrealist stuff, like the stuff with the mirror and the I'm a sucker for like highbrow artsy stuff. I eat it all up. And like all like the morph cuts and stuff, and like once again, it's Farscape doing something that has been done a lot, but doing it very well.
Very well. They could have easily subbed in Wayne Pegram this episode.
Oh, easily, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But they put Ben Browder in the makeup.
Yeah.
And I loved that choice. I loved that choice.
I think it's, again, that it's so uncomfortable. Like, to see this beloved character that we care so much about, you know, our human sort of insert that we relate to the most, to then see him with that, the makeup and the outfit and it just, and the cadence changing and everything. It makes you immediately go, oh no, this is dangerous. Yeah. This is bad. Yeah. Everyone's in danger now.
I was so like, what the hell when it first happened, I was like, no way. Mm-hmm. Holy shit.
Danger, Will Robinson, danger.
I need you all to know, the first time I saw this episode back again, this is back when it aired on television, my jaw hit the fucking floor. The second he goes, there's no Scorpius here. It's just me. I was like, oh my god, like I died. I was freaking out.
Good shit.
If Twitter had been like a thing at the time, which I mean, maybe it was around, I don't remember. But like, if Twitter, if social media, I don't think it was. Like, if social media was around then, the way it
my
is
space
now,
was around,
I would have been like live tweeting all my reactions, just like, holy shit.
You could have posted a Zenga about it.
If anyone was in the fan communities online at the time, we'd love to hear from you in the comments.
Freaking
GeoCities. Please, please.
Okay, behind the scenes bit of stuff.
Oh, yes.
When they first did it, put Ben in the makeup, it was so good that the production crew kept thinking he was Wayne Pegram. They actually, they actually had to cut back on it. He had to make it less good.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Because to make it read that it is Ben in there and not Wayne.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
That's the less
cool.
good version that we got? Because, like, holy shit.
I want to know, what does the really good version look like?
I wish there were pictures. I can see how they went into it. Yeah. I can see how they could have gone harder. Because it's not as wrinkled as Wayne. It's not as built up, I guess.
That's the subtler version.
There's the makeup and costume that did a really good job, but then there's also Ben Browder, as we've just to beat this drum with this dead horse, there's also Ben Browder's performance of he's doing an excellent Wayne Pegram. When he's Harvey, but he's in no makeup, he puts a little, just the very faintest lyrical lilt.
Yeah.
Pegram's accent at the end of his sentences
as he's talking.
When he's walking down the hallway passing Rigel, and Rigel tries to talk to me, he's like, no, Rigel. You're like, oh, yeah, that's Harvey. Yeah. That's not him. And he punches him in the
And when he calls Aaron little lady in the
And then Wayne Pegram and Scorpius has a very specific way of like leering at you kind of over the side, and he'll bring his face around and he won't blink a lot, and he'll say hello, John, you know, and Ben Browder just nails it when he's in full Harvey makeup.
He's such a phenomenal actor, and we've seen him delve into quite a few different like characters and personality traits, and like he's done so much in this show already, and we're just finishing season two. Like, he's done so much, and I'm just so impressed,
honestly.
Yeah, and we haven't talked a lot about the very end of the episode, but like that moment where he comes into the operating room and he's like, hi, guess who's that bitch?
Like, remember the actual me?
Remember the real me? And you're like, oh, wait, that's him. Like,
and yeah. Then
the glee. Yeah.
So much glee. Yes. He's so joyful.
The gibberish right at the end too is so off-putting. I don't know. It leaves me with this like, oh fuck. Like,
yeah, it's not hilarious. It's
no
unsettling.
Yeah.
Very unsettling.
It's there's any number of problematic depictions of mental illnesses, both acute and chronic, but this was not one of them. This was not Rain Man or something. Like this was very much this person has just been absolutely wrung out like a sponge in this episode and is at his wit's end. And on top of that, can't talk.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to convey all that with gibberish without without being hilarious, without being unintentionally or offensively
humorous, it's so scary.
Is just props to him. Like I want to give Ben Browder a high five.
Mm. Yeah, they work closely on getting the gibberish to be right.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind moment at the end too, where the doctor is like, do we keep when he goes over the memories of Aaron and like you were saying earlier, Mandy, we cut away, but we know the doctor saved it. And I this time and right before I logged on, I was having dinner with my partner and we were watching the episode together, and whenever she does watch Farscape, she likes it despite herself. And she turned to me at that moment and she was like, would you forget me? And I was like, you know what? I wouldn't. And I was able to, thanks to Ben Browder, I was able to put myself in his mindset. I was like, I wouldn't, because remembering the pain is worth it to remember everything else.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. What is it? Grief is just what is that line from?
What is grief but love persevering?
That's it. Mm. Yeah. I love that.
The episode does a really good job, and so the theme, or the I guess the allegory or the metaphor, or whatever you want to call it, that they play with this episode is absolutely a question of masks, and who wears what mask and all that kind of stuff, and they hand it right to you in the opening scene between Rigel and Zahn, where Rigel doesn't behave in the way that Zahn assumes / the audience probably assumed that Rigel was behaving, and has a character reversal of being magnanimous instead of being greedy. And Zahn is forced to confront, like, you know, I misjudged you, Rigel. And so the rest of the episode is everybody presenting one way, but being something else. And it gets literal and sinister with John and Harvey, but it also gets tragic with Dargo. It gets, you know, subverted with the Doc and with Gunship, and, you know, making sure that like they're set up as one thing and then shown to be something else. And then, so by the end of the episode, everybody's masks have been taken off, except for Stark's, because we already know what's under his, and really getting to know, see, and understand how far these characters have come over the two seasons that we've gotten to spend with them. To me, it was fantastic. And I mean, Aaron's mask drops when she's around John, but she puts it back on when she goes to see Crace.
Mm-hmm.
And she dies ultimately with her mask off. And it's fantastic to watch.
Mm-hmm. And her entire journey has been, you know, finding herself behind the expected mask, you know, you've wormed your way into my heart. And you showed me that I had one.
Yes. Oh, my God. And she faces her death with such dignity and strength. Like,
we should all aspire. Holy
shit. Yeah.
Like, I hope if I'm ever plummeting to my death from my ejected spacecraft over an alien and frozen wasteland, that I do so well.
I'd be screaming.
Yeah, I'd still be like pulling on the cords and like, where is the injection? What's happening? I need to get out of this. I'm also terrified of heights, so that's like my worst case scenario right there.
Right,
the only way it could get any worse is I was covered in spiders and all my loved ones tell me they hate me at the same time. that's the worst death.
Mandy, I don't feel like you should have read my diary before you joined us on this podcast. It was unfair.
Oh, that wasn't part of the required reading before. I'm sorry. My bad.
Yeah, well, could you expect less from Aaron?
No. Officer Soon.
Officer Soon doing her thing.
That is the radiant Aaron Soon.
Yep.
Are you ready to hear the name of the next episode?
No.
Yeah.
Look at well,
yeah.
Season what he of said. Death.
Sure.
Oh. Is someone else going to die?
Now I've got Season of the Witch stuck in my head, but yeah.
Season 3 is my favorite season of all of Farscape. Okay. So like y'all are in for a treat. And for a treat, I mean, also you're going to get emotionally devastated because this season holds no punches.
Bring the pain.
Looking forward to it.
It's hurt me. I want you to hurt me.
Oh, sure hurts me.
Oh, it's
like
coming.
It.
It's coming.
Yeah. Our next episode is going to be a wrap up of season 2. And then the episode after that will be us coming back. Hopefully with, inshallah, knock on wood, that we'll come back for. And we also intend to record a reaction to Season of Death.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Nice.
We'll find that reaction on our Patreon.
Yeah. This is excellent reasons to sign up for our Patreon.
Do it.
So watch Jack and I get devastated live before your eyes.
Yeah. The tears are better live, folks. Just
they
saying.
They really are.
Okay, so what's your favorite part? And I'm going to invite our guests to go first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's so hard to pick a favorite part because there's so much of this episode I love. But I'm going to go ahead and pick the opening part of the episode where John is punching the mirror, seeing the vision of Harvey. And then when Aaron walks in, is like, you need to face reality. There's no Scorpius. And then you get that moment of him saying, you're right, Aaron, there's no Scorpius here. It's only me. And it does that little flash of him in the makeup back to being quote normal John or looking John. I love that whole moment. It's so good.
For me, it's just Aaron's whole death sequence. I think in the baby, you're not going to die like this. Oh, my heart. Yeah, that's mine.
For me, it is that moment where the diagnosis touches on the memories of Aaron. And we get to see both all of that devastation in the form of how John remembers her. And we also get to see John reliving it. That moment was just absolute gold.
Mm-hmm. I kind of have to cheat. I think there are two favorite moments for me. First, there is the one that breaks me with you wormed your way into my heart. And Aaron said, you show me that I have one. And the way she has her head on his shoulder, which is a John gesture. That's just, and then when she calls back to it, it's just this, And then my other one is, I am no higher than I have ever been. My position is fixed.
Yep. Oh, Pilot. I love Pilot.
Everybody's having a terrible time except for Pilot.
Pilot and Moyer are having a great time.
Yeah, they're just wonderful like, time.
Yeah.
And Stark.
And Stark, as always.
Yep.
Yeah. So with that, Mandy, where can folks find you?
Yes, you can find me over on Instagram, YouTube, most social media. I am no longer on Twitter or X or where the hell it's called now. At mainly Mandy, though, basically everywhere. Definitely give me a look-see sometime. Most of my videos I do talks about different elements of like non-monogamy, polyamory, but I do talk about other things as well, including my all-time favorite movie, Alien. So if you want to hear me wax poetic about a different sci-fi property, that's where you can hear me. And of course, Respect the Dead as well.
And you have a video coming up sometime in the near future?
I do. Yes, it's been delayed a little bit because I'm about to go through a move, but there will be a new video coming out in September about a supposedly the best non-monogamous representation we have in Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman. But I have feelings about that, so we'll see.
I was there for the rewatch.
Yeah, you know, you've seen it too.
And Jack, my love, where can people find you?
Well, sorry, you can find me on Twitter or X or whatever the hell it is. I'm hanging in there for a little while. I don't know. Whatever. We'll see what happens. But that's at Lack of Surprise One. That's all one word with a number one at the end. You can find me over on Discord in our Discord server, Howdy Poppets. I'm also on Instagram at Jack Cram, lowercase, one word. Josh, what about you, sir?
In addition to being able to find me in the mirror, even when the mirror is not there anymore, you can also find me over on Instagram at Josh Gosden. Mostly I just post about food that I cook and self-care that I'm learning and trying to pay forward over the course of my time. Sara?
Well, you can find me on YouTube at The Fat Culture Critic. I'm working on a thing that I hope will be in about Halloween time. I am also on Twitter. I refuse to call it anything else until they turn Amen, the lights sister. Out or something. I don't know. I'm on Blue Sky, and so is the podcast now. And
oh, yeah, so am I. I forgot.
and the Instagram and of course you can find things on our Patreon. And links to everything will be in the doobly doo. That is us for this week. So come join us next time.
Thanks for being here, Mandy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun. And please have me on again because I love the show. And I have so many feelings about it, if you couldn't tell. So please bring me back.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we're definitely gonna have you back. Mm-hmm. So with that, we'll say bye, folks.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, quite this. You know, one more bit of weird backstage tangenty stuff. The dogs that Ben has had, you know, Crichton has had a remarkable number of dogs for his 30 years.
Yeah, a lot.
Those are all the production company. They're all the people who
have, that's cute.
They all brought pictures of their dogs. Those are the real dogs of the people who make John Crichton.
It does make you wonder, like, how did he have so many dogs? Like, before he went to space, like,
just a really irresponsible dog. How many
dogs did you have it at one time? Dogs.
It's hard to learn how to take care of a pet at first.
Yeah, take care of your freaking dogs, man.
Yeah,
and
those were some childhood dogs, probably. But
yeah, and even in the depths, we get a little comic relief with the politicians.
If someone could just cut Donald Trump out of my memories, that'd be great.
I would Jim Carrey my shit for that, absolutely.
Yeah.
Me too, and I'm Australian.
Bro. It's been rough.
Yeah.
Although lately it's been awesome, but it's